1 month late on his payments, on his credit card payments, because the credit card statement will come along saying you need to pay the minimum or somewhere, you know, somewhere between the minimum and the full balance that you owe on the credit card by a certain date. Well, that certain date was the 20th, I think, but he wanted to pay it off in full, so he paid it on the 25th. So why, those 5 days counts as a late payment. But in his mind, he's actually making the payment every single month. But the message he's portraying to people looking at credit reports is, you've got a contract. The contract says we will provide you with this credit card that you can utilize. You make a repayment by this date. Well, you've ignored that. You're not doing anything about that. So therefore, how can you expect another financial institution to want to lend you money if you're not going to agree, you're not going to stick to the contract that you signed to? So that's a big, that's a very simple example, but it's something that I see regularly, where people have a contract with a financial institution, but they don't actually observe it regularly. It's better to pay the minimum and then clear the full balance when you have the cash than wait to clear the cash, so wait to clear the debt after you've gone past the due date. So please bear that in mind, because that's one of the small things that you can do as a business owner, okay, with your personal finances to ensure that you stay creditworthy and it's not an impediment to you getting finance. Not sure if you're not inviting any questions now. Any particular questions? Stand into silence. That's what we like.
Increase, and but your debtors aren't paying, their payment terms like 30, 60 days, and the money's not coming in quick enough, so it puts you in a bit of a lag of a debt, I guess. How do you bridge that gap?
Okay, the first thing I will say is you need to have management information and forecasts, okay, and cash flow forecasts, okay, to look to see what's the picture going to look like 6 months down the line, 12 months down the line, okay? If you can see that there's a gap is in the working capital cycle, so essentially your expected money is coming in and you have to pay money out, okay? So there's a gap there. If you have a forecast, okay, you look to see within the forecast, who can I pay, who can I defer and pay a bit later, okay? Because if your expected money is coming in after 30 days, okay, it's pointed you spending all of your money on day two, and you haven't got money coming in. So you need to try and close that gap as best as you can. It could be delaying some of the payments that you have to make, okay, or incentivizing people to pay you sooner, okay? But there's only so far you can do, okay? If wages are due to staff on a certain day, you cannot defer that. You have to make that payment, okay? So certain things you will not be able to defer, okay? Now, in that situation, if there is still a gap, okay, the benefit of having a forecast, okay, it then allows you to identify that and actually seek intervention early. Go to your bank, say, look, this is the gap, okay, I need an overdraft. I need some sort of, you know, whether it's preserving your cash flow by you know, doing what Tony said with, instead of spending a large sum of money to buy an asset, okay, maybe actually get asset finance, so you're preserving part of your cash within the business to help you through journeys like this, okay? Or if you need invoice finance, some of that invoice is outstanding, can you go to the bank, can they release the cash earlier for you, okay? So you've got the cash, and then when the customer pays you back after 30 days, the bank will obviously take a bit of interest and fee, and the rest then comes to you. But in the meantime, you'll have your cash earlier. So there's a number of different things that you could potentially look at to try and plug that gap.
So just to add to that, so you say incentivize your customers to pay, because sometimes you've got 30 days, but they're not paying for 90 days or 120 days. So how do you incentivize your customers to pay earlier, in your opinion?
Well, it's carrot and stick. So you incentivize, if possible, okay, discounts for early payments, for example. Okay, it's better for you to give a 5% discount and get the money in earlier, okay, than going to the overdraft and pay 10% interest rate, potentially. Okay, so, but you also have to look at your terms of business. Okay, how robust is it? Is this something that you bought off the shelf, or is this something that was put together with the benefit of a solicitor? Because if there isn't, okay, then it sometimes can hamper your ability to recover that money quickly or to take early intervention. Okay, if there's a clause in there for you charging interest for late payments, it focuses people's minds. Okay, so there's a number of different things. It's not a perfect world. Okay, you can send someone invoice for 30 days and they pay after 60 days, or they'll pay after 35 days. Okay, or someone will pay after 15. So it's not a perfect world. But what you need to try and do is make sure your systems and operation is robust. So if that occurrence does take place, you've got some levers you can pull to try and alleviate it. Sorry, I'm mindful of my time. So I'm available afterwards if people got more questions. In the meantime, I'll hand over to Philip.
Thank you, Eddie. So we were asked to introduce ourselves at the start of our presentation, and I was going to talk about the fact that I work for Lloyds Banking Group. But I'm actually going to introduce myself in this way. I'm Philip Yamandi, and I'm proud to be a British citizen born in the Democratic Republic of Congo, because I'm just so proud of my heritage. So another reason why I've introduced myself in that way is because I spent many years working for the Financial Services Authority, and I used to have to do presentations in front of bankers. That was very challenging, and there were always, I'd look across and there'd be a sea of white faces, and it has to be said, it's an absolute pleasure and a breath of fresh air to be here looking across there and seeing beautiful faces that look like me. White people are beautiful too, but this audience is super beautiful. After the FSA, I moved to the Bank of England, and after that, I became head of risk at Lloyds Banking Group. That's where I was headhunted to join Lloyds. And at the moment at Lloyds, I work in credit decisioning. So I'm basically responsible for building the strategies, algorithms, and rules, and in fact, the technology as well, that decides on whether to say yes or no to your credit application. And I have another role as well, which is I look after private banking decisioning. So these are our wealthy customers, which I'm sure many of you will become if you're not already wealthy customers. So that's a really interesting role, actually, because I get to see some really interesting applications, for instance, from high-profile footballers. And I'm a big Chelsea fan, and now I've actually seen some Chelsea footballers, so that's really cool. So what am I going to talk about? Actually, before I get started, I just want to get an idea of who here has actually, in the past, applied for commercial credit, or more specifically, asset finance. Okay, we have one. We have two. Okay, that's good. So who has considered it but hasn't gone ahead with the application? Okay, one gentleman over there. Would you mind sharing why you considered it but didn't go ahead with the application? Sir, can somebody pass the gentleman a mic? Somebody got a mic they can pass him.
Yeah, essentially it was just kind of making a decision for myself as whether I'd be able to make the payments back towards the product that obviously the finance I'm taking out against the asset, or if I'm willing to also lose the asset if something was to go wrong. So it was about kind of balancing out what was right for me, and in the end I decided it's best not to, because although I had confidence inside my product and what I'm trying to do, I ain't confident in the external factors of whether people are going to buy into it at the rate that I need to keep up with this payment.
Yeah, that's a great answer, thank you. And that's actually a common response, actually. And it's interesting because a government paper suggested that one in three of investment in asset finance, so that's cars, so vehicles, equipment, machinery, was funded by asset finance in 2024. I remember when I was in my early 20s, so about 20 years ago, I know I don't look old enough, going to make a commercial credit loan application at a local branch because I wanted to start my own business that uses data to make data-driven investment decisions. And I remember approaching one of the big high street banks, and next thing I know, I was in a meeting with a relationship manager. And he's a lovely chap. I remember him quite well, actually, even after all these years, because he was such a nice chap. And I lived somewhere called Thetford, which some of you might know. It is in Norfolk. And Thetford has one of the biggest forests in the UK, spanning Suffolk and Norfolk. And I remember him joking about how he usually saw applications that are related to forestry or agriculture. And so what I was coming up with was quite innovative. And I thought the meeting went quite well, actually. I kind of came out of the meeting, you know, like dirt off my shoulder, feeling quite good, thinking, yeah, I've nailed that. Thinking, yeah, I'm going to get that, the funding. 2 weeks later, I got a letter from the bank. It turns out that my application was rejected. So as you can imagine, I felt really hurt, really angry, like I've been kicked in the stomach. But I guess looking back now, when I fast forward into this role I do now at Lloyds Banking Group in credit decisioning, I could kind of see why I was rejected for the lending. But I think individual stories like mine from over 20 years ago possibly drive misconceptions on how difficult it is to actually get finance. And I'm seeing that from having looked at market data and it's actually produced by my own team. So I'm in an incredible privilege of being in a team where I get to see pretty much one in seven of all SME data. And what I can tell you is actually the chances of getting credit is probably higher than you actually believe. And that's from data that my team has actually pulled together. So when I went for my loan application all those years ago, I didn't actually go anywhere else. And that's actually in keeping with what market data shows at the moment, which is four in five institutions that seek credit and get rejected just don't go back. And that is a shame. Because just because you get rejected by one of the big banks, you know, or whoever, it doesn't mean you're going to get rejected by somebody else. So please do keep that in mind.
Will that go on your credit, you know, as a hard search, and then that will affect
you? If you had a hard search, yeah, absolutely. But that still doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to get rejected because you've got a hard search on your credit profile. Okay, and I'm going to talk a bit more about that in a moment. So what can I say? I can say that, like the relationship manager that I spoke to many years ago, many bankers are still very friendly and approachable. But I think what's different now is some banks are increasingly focusing on supporting customers to get the the right lending outcome by helping customers to understand why they've been turned down, and crucially, helping customers to get themselves to a position where if they apply in the future, then they'll get an acceptance. Right, so suppose you have your business, and perhaps it's a lovely beauty salon in the middle of Birmingham, and you decide, you know what, I'm actually going to go and approach a bank. It doesn't have to be a bank, it could be a fintech, for example. And you're going to approach the lender to ask for some money so that you can fund an asset. And obviously, Tanya was speaking about asset finance earlier. Now, the process you go through to get the lending outcome will depend on the channel that you've used to seek your lending. And what I mean by that is if you've gone through the digital channel or through telephony, or if you've come via a broker like Addy. So in terms of what that process might look like, when going through the digital channel, for example, you'd potentially log onto your online banking platform or a banking app and then put in your details onto the platform and how much you want to borrow, for how long, etc. And then you'll get a decision returned to you, which will be approve, decline, or refer, which basically means yes, no, or maybe. And I think one of the things that perhaps puts people off is that stage, is that decisioning stage, where it kind of feels like a bit of a lottery, right? You've kind of pressed the button, and then you wait for a while for this decision to come up. But there is, of course, clear logic underlying the decision, and it's becoming increasingly recognized that it's helpful for customers if they actually understand what's going on behind that logic. And a lot of the factors that feed into that kind of yes or no decision is actually under your control, quite frankly. So, for example, one of the things that might be considered by a lender is the sector that you're operating in. So, for instance, some banking institutions might have a low appetite towards lending, for instance, to industries, to organizations that are, for instance, in gambling or in smoking and vaping, etc. The director's background can also be checked, and this can be particularly important if you're a smaller business. So, for instance, there might be a check on whether the director has been involved in a previous business failure. And I should clarify on this point, actually. So it'd be, for instance, okay to be involved in a business that was wound down in an orderly way, but actually, if you close the business with outstanding debt, then that could be a problem for you. An example of something else that's under your control is whether you're filing your accounts on time. And Eddie made a point around kind of late payments, etc. So usually the bank would do some kind of bureau search where they'll kind of show some of your credit history. And Eddie also talked about stuff like CCJs and other kind of adverse credit history. So those kind of things would impact your yes or no decision. But it is important to understand these things, because if you understand them, then you know, actually, if I behave in this way, then actually I have a better chance of getting that lending. So on the face of it, it can seem quite daunting, but it shouldn't put you off, because, from the data that I've seen, despite these checks, clients are possibly more likely to get lending than they actually think. And like I said, I've seen the data, and I can see 1 in 7 SME business data, and I'm telling you the chances are probably higher than you think. And there are also some financial health check tools out there that can really help you prepare for future lending, and it's worth investing time just to kind of look at those health check tools. And the last one I want to say actually was thinking about risk as well. So before I worked for Lloyds Banking Group, like I say, I worked for the Bank of England, and I worked at the FSA during the financial crisis. And one of my roles was to stress test banks. And what I can say is the risks that banks face are very similar to the risks that smaller businesses face on a daily basis, okay? And one of those risks is liquidity risk. And essentially what this risk is essentially the risk of running out of money, so having no money left in the bank. So not being able to pay your staff on time and not being able to pay your utility bills. So you'll be aware of kind of the high profile liquidity risk issues that happened to the likes of Northern Rock in the lead up to the financial crisis. But actually, this is a risk that all businesses are facing every single day. Everyone faces into this risk. And I earlier on gave the example of a beauty parlor, and I've done that intentionally because I have a real life story of that. So a couple of friends of mine started up a hair salon not long ago, actually, and it was all going very well. But then they went through this kind of big renovation project, and unfortunately they ran into some challenges with the premises. And at that point, they had actually run out of money. You know, they had no money in the bank. So that's a clear example of liquidity risk there in action. And what taking up money for instance, for asset financing does for you is it kind of helps you to manage that kind of cash flow. So it reduces the risk of you actually running into that position, that kind of liquidity risk position. So I guess really the key messages I wanted to for you to take away is that there's often a misconception about the chances of you getting approval for lending, and there are a lot of options out there that you should consider. And it's just worth picking up the phone to whether your bank or your relationship manager or indeed a broker such as Eddie, just kind of talk through what those options are. Thank you.
Round of applause to our panelists. Thank you so much. I'm a bit conscious of time, so is there any burning questions anyone has? If we go for like one or two questions to the panelists. Has anyone got any questions? Keith.
I was going to ask. Thank you. I was going to ask, and it's a question really to Philip here. Of those businesses that are applying, small businesses, what is the chance of them being successful? Is it a 1 in 10 chance, 1 in 5, 1 in 2?
That's a really great question, Keith. So it very much does depend on what product they are going after. I could talk about asset finance because my team actually looks after asset finance decisioning, and also I'm talking from a kind of a large lender point of view, so probably our process is probably going to be similar to NatWest. What I can say is, from the data I've looked at, there are, and this is like 800,000 SME customers I have looked at, a good proportion of those would actually have a high chance, I suppose if you're pressing me for a number, probably like more than 75% chance of actually getting asset finance lending if they approached us.
Which is good.
Yeah, and I think that there's a real misconception about this. I really do think there's a lot of SMEs who are afraid to approach the banks and other lenders because they think they won't get the funding because they hear of stories like mine from 20 years ago when I was rejected. But actually, there is a good chance out there for many to actually get that lending.
Thank you.
Thank you. One last question. Anyone else wanted to ask a question?
So what would the interest rates be? Because I know that, you know, you've kind of got the Bank of England rates, and then you've got the other interest rates variable for SMEs. I mean, if you go to a broker, it might be like 16% or more. So from the bank's perspective, what would the interest rates be for an SME if they were accepted?
Yeah, so it's a good, great question. So the interest rate would indeed vary, as you alluded to there. People like Lloyds Banking Group, I'm sure NatWest as well, if you go onto the webpage, we often have, well, for sure, Lloyds Banking Group have a rate checker. We can actually go and put a few details in it. It'll tell you what rate you're likely to get for that particular product. I couldn't kind of cite any kind of off by heart because it was quite variable. And I'm aware that, that's the question earlier around who has actually gone out and tried to get asset finance lending, I am aware that one of the challenges that CFOs have put to the banks is around the actual cost of the credit. That's of course a decision you've got to make, right? But as I said earlier on, the thing about taking out that credit to finance your asset or something else is that it frees up funds to grow your business and kind of frees up money for opportunities and for investment, etc.
If I can add to that quickly, the interest rate is always a function of other factors within the business. So, you know, how established is the business? How profitable is the business? What are the other drivers are, for example, the sector Philip mentioned about particular sectors. If that bank hasn't got an appetite for that particular sector, then it's deemed to be high risk, okay? For example, I remember during COVID, a lot of retail businesses were deemed a high risk because people weren't going to the shops, okay? So there's a number of different factors that feeds into what determines the interest rate applicable on a particular loan, whether it's asset finance, whether it's commercial mortgage, whether it's business loan. So there's a number of different factors that feeds into that.
Factors. The other factors that come into play is term. So if you have something that's quite short term, say a 12-month period or a 6-month period, the rates tend to be higher. If you have a longer term, then the bank is seeing that paid off in a regular amount for a longer term, the rates can be lower. So it's always worth having a conversation and having a play, I'd say, to say, what does that look like if it was 5 years? What would that look like if it's 6 months? What would it look like if it's 12 months? But I think the key point here is you can tailor what you need to the stage of the business that you're at, and don't be afraid to ask that question, because there's a team of people here who are willing to, I'm seeing nods, yeah? Yeah, I'm seeing nods. There's a team of people here, whatever stage your business at, whether it's startup and its growth and its grants, whether it's equity finance, whether it's debt finance, have a conversation, because what Philip has just said, 75% of lenders, some of those applications are successful. We want to give you the money. Just because you get rejection the first time, come back and say, what do I need to tweak? Do I need to ask for a longer term? Do I need to ask more for my evidence? Do I need to give you more information? I think that's the key. That's the key point. Is that right, guys?
I think that's a really great point, actually. And I think it's another thing that where we're not doing enough to educate our customers, I suppose, in that if you go to a bank and or another kind of lender and you ask for something and we can't quite do that deal for you, you should ask the question, actually, what can you do for me? Okay, maybe you can't limit over, you know, 5 years or 3 years or whatever. What can you do? Because we will have, obviously, rate curves that will tell us, depending on how long I'm going to borrow for what, is there security, blah, blah. There's probably something we can do for you. So it's worth having the conversation with the bank where they're just going to walk away and go, okay, well, they couldn't do that particular thing, I'm going to go away now. Just talk to them and say, well, what is it that you can do?
Thank you so much. I think Tanya mentioned about startup loans as well. Have any of you heard of a startup loans company or the British Business Bank? If you are less than 3 years trading, you can apply for a startup loan, and they're government-backed loans. They're 6.5%, they're cheaper than bank borrowing. And they also give you mentorship as well. So if you are less than 3 years, what I would say is have a look. They give you up to 25,000 per director or sole trader. So if you've got four people in the business, it's potentially £100,000. Again, if you go to the British Business Bank website, you'll have more information about startup loans. But it's something that a lot of businesses don't know. And actually, it's cheaper borrowing, because you mentioned about what the interest rates are. 6.5%, you're not going to get that on traditional high street lending. So if one thing, have a look at that as well. But thank you again to our panelists. Going to end with, so you're leaving today with fresh insights and hopefully practical tools to help you navigate the world of business finance with the confidence. And remember that the right funding can unlock the growth and impact. So keep exploring, stay curious, and don't hesitate to reach out for support. Like we said, banks are there. They're not the big bad wolves. They're there to help support you. So do reach out and ask the questions. Don't be afraid. But we wish you all the success on all your business journeys. And thank you all.
Good afternoon, everybody. I hope you've been enjoying the information so far.
Yeah.
Please, can I have all the people to come to the front? Well, meet me at the side if you are pitching today, please, because I know not everybody let me know that they was here. So if you are pitching, can you please meet me at the side so I can check you in and then we can get you ready? Thank you.
I am, but I'll wait for them to call the panel.